Jesus heals the man. And you would think that would be maybe the end of the story, but it isn't. Because the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the time, are really disgusted at Jesus. They're not disgusted at the fact that Jesus heals the man by spitting on the ground, mixing his spit with dirt and wiping on the man's eyes. No, that wasn't what disgusted them. What disgusted them was the fact that Jesus had healed the man on the Sabbath, which the religious rulers could not see beyond. They could not see the good of the healing. They could only see a rule being broken. So the blind man, having received healing, he is the one that has an understanding that Jesus is the Good Shepherd. He is the one, not all these religious leaders, who understands that he's not a thief or a bandit. Actually, his understanding is way beyond the Pharisees. The Pharisees call themselves followers of Moses, but they're not able to discern the voice and the actions of the Good Shepherd. So, chapter 10. These are parable-like verses. It's like a parable. And they are directly responding to what the Pharisees have been saying and their arguments and their refusal to have any curiosity about who it is that Jesus is. It's not that they have come against him, really. I think it's that they absolutely refuse to even have any open-mindedness at all. There's not even a chink of openness. So, let's set the scene. Firstly, talking about sheep in Jesus' time, the talk of sheepfolds, shepherds, and sheep thieves, or rustlers. Not quite sure why they're called rustlers, but anyway. That would have been normal to people. It would have been very normal to see people herding sheep, taking care of sheep. That was a part of their culture. For here, us, here in Cambridge, it's a little bit more difficult to imagine. And I can't actually think of a more suitable analogy. So where we live, I was thinking, we do have Coldham Common, we've got cows, but there are definitely no sheep. I did read that in one area of the South Pacific, when translating the Bible, because they had no sheep on the island, they actually translated him as the good herdsman who looked after the swine. But I think I would rather be compared to a sheep than to a swine. I don't know about you. Sheep are easily stolen. They're easily driven away. They could be attacked by dogs, by foxes, or even by people. And I imagine that's the reason why they're not kept on our commons in Cambridge. I think they would, might just get taken away. The people Jesus was speaking to around 2,000 years ago, this was just normal for them. And they also, it was more than the physical presence of sheep. I love a sheep's. The biblical stories, they grew up with biblical stories that were full of sheep and shepherds. And they knew that King David began life as a shepherd. He's the one that defeated Goliath with a stone. He became a shepherd of God's people. But there were also bad shepherds. I mean, King David wasn't a perfect shepherd. And there were kings who did not lead well. There were people who led their people into poor pastures. And there are prophets who record crying out with God's promises, asking and predicting that God was going to send the ultimate shepherd, who is Jesus. Sheep then, back in those days, and sheep now, need human care. They need to be led to food, they need shearing, and often they need intervention from the shepherd, especially during lambing season. And we are very similar. We too are made for care. We need God's care. So the gospel reading today brings us immediately into this metaphor of sheep and shepherds. In the reading, we find there are sheep There are shepherds, there are thieves, there are hired hands and gatekeepers. So there's quite a big list of characters that come in and out of this passage. It's brilliant. It's full of image and it gives us a little bit of a further help to understand who Jesus is and who Jesus is not, just as importantly. Jesus sets the scene. There's a sheepfold. It would have likely been a stone wall high enough that a human could probably climb over it, but not low enough that a wolf could jump over it. And it would have had a gap. It needed some form of a gate. And in terms of the people in this sheepfold, the only person that comes in and out of the gate is the shepherd. Nobody else goes in and out. Anyone who's up to no good, they're going to get over the wall. The gatekeeper opens the gate for the shepherd. And immediately the shepherd speaks and they hear his voice. All the sheep get to hear his voice. And I'm told that shepherds used to have like a call, a kind of like either like a whistle or a cry or a shout, and it would be individual to each shepherd. So the flock that belonged to the shepherd would know that that was their keeper's voice. So he calls his own sheep in this parable by name and leads them out. And back in those days, sheepfolds were not necessarily just for one flock. They used to be a shared space where there might be several flocks kept at once. So it was even more important that the shepherd and the sheep knew one another, that the shepherd could call those sheep out, separate them from the other flocks. So the shepherd calls the sheep by name and leads them out, and the shepherd goes ahead of them. So it's not a kind of driving them from behind. The shepherd leads them out. The sheep follow him because they know his voice. And this gives us all an image of who God is. He is not the one that drives us. If we feel driven by God, I would totally suggest that that is not of God. God leads us, and he leads us gently. The sheep follow him because they know this voice, this sound. And the sheep will not follow a shepherd because they do not know the voice of strangers. They will not follow a stranger, sorry, because they do not know the voice of strangers. They have learnt the voice of their shepherd and they're just not going to go with anyone else. Jesus goes a step further to emphasise and add to the picture, I am the gate for the sheep. Whoever enters by me and not over the walls will be saved and will come in and go out to find pasture. And in comparison, the thief is the one that comes to kill, steal, and destroy. The thief is not going to be able to go through the gate. It's not their business. And finally, Jesus states, I am the good shepherd. We've had all these pictures of shepherding, but actually it's not until now that Jesus actually states who he is. I am the good shepherd. And unlike these historic king shepherds of the past, Jesus is stating here that he is the one. He is the good shepherd, and he will not let them down. So the parable speaks directly to the question that the Pharisees have asked in chapter 9. Who is this person? And surely he can't be God because he's healed on the Sabbath. But here he is. He is the one that does the good things. That is more important than the rules. So, how might we respond to this passage, to the fact that Jesus calls us? This Sunday in the church year is Vocation Sunday, when we can take the opportunity to think about how we can discern God's voice and how we can follow him. Vocation Sunday is just a gentle invitation, really, to pause and to listen to God's voice. We believe that God calls each and every one of us, and that deep peace, contentment, a sense of safety and joy are found when we respond to that call. And the word vocation comes from the Latin word which means to speak and to call. And sometimes the word vocation can sort of feel like it's reserved and separate and just for a few people. Perhaps just for people wearing bits of plastic in their collar. But it's not. Vocations, we all have a vocation. We are all called by God. But it's different for each of us. It's personal. And God speaks to you. And I encourage you to take time. Perhaps if you're really busy, it might be on a short walk or as you go to sleep, to listen, to wonder. God calls us to all sorts of things. And it may be that you are living right in the middle of that calling right now. It might be that you are called to the work that you are doing, to the people that you are living with. It might be that he is calling you on to something a little more, a little deeper. It might be that there's a kind of nagging wondering about whether there is something else that God is calling you to or another place. Just to say, it's not always somewhere really dramatic. When I first became a Christian, I really, really prayed that I would get to go somewhere really exciting. And I love Cambridge with all my heart. I was born down the road. But as of yet, I have not been called out of Cambridge. Only for holidays. There is a beautiful thing about being called to where we are. So God calls each and every one of you, firstly, into his care. That is your first calling. That God calls you into his care. He wants to care for you. And we have the choice to say yes or no to God's care. And as we follow him in his care, he then invites us to join in with him. In the Church of England, vocations take so many different forms. There are more formal vocations, such as ordained ministry, lay ministry, church wardens, serving within parish life. We have school governors. There are so many things. There are all vocations outside of the church, to teaching, to caring for a family, caring for a loved one. There are so many different types of vocations. And every single one of those vocations matters. And every yes to those vocations. And sometimes we have to reaffirm that we say yes to those things, particularly the vocations that are harder, particularly those vocations perhaps caring for people. Because every yes makes a difference. So I'm going to finish by saying that listening to God's call shapes and transforms us. Allow yourself to listen to those little wonderings or those little questionings. Or if what you are called to now is difficult, then lay that before him and ask that he would give you a fresh sense of what that is and why you are called to it. Sometimes we need courage. We might even doubt our ability or question whether we are capable enough. But God doesn't call us because we are perfectly equipped. One of my first prayers to God when I committed my life to him was, dear God, please don't ever make me pray in front of anyone. He somehow taught me to do things that I really didn't feel I was ever capable of doing. And I know that that's the same for all of you here too. And we're not defined by what we achieve, but by our openness and obedience to his voice. We're never alone. God promises the gift of his Holy Spirit to guide us, to strengthen us, to renew us, and to give us confidence in his care and in his path ahead. So, I invite you today, this evening, during the next week, to ask yourself, what might God be speaking to you? Where might he be inviting you to serve or to renew your commitment to serving? A friend recently said to me that God doesn't give us a lifetime, he gives us a day at a time. And that is such a relief when we think about the long term, the call. Just do one day at a time, one step at a time. And it might be that you've been resisting God's call to follow him. And I would encourage you today that today is a new day. And I'd ask you to consider, do you trust the voice of the Good Shepherd to care for you and lead you? And do you trust him to give you the courage and grace you need to follow? Amen.